Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
A health ministry immunity study shows few unreported COVID cases across the Czech Republic. The European Commission forecasts the Czech economy will contract by even more than during the 2009 global financial crisis, and a replica of Prague's 17th century Marian Column could be in place already in August. The number of unreported COVID cases in the Czech Republic is quite low, only a few per thousand, according to preliminary results of a large-scale Ministry of Health immunity study. The highest incidence of infections, still less than 5%, was recorded in the Moravian town of Litovel, which had been under quarantine several weeks ago. The lowest incidence was in the regional capital of Brno. Samples were also taken in Prague, which has the greatest overall number of cases, as well as in the cities of Litoměřice, Olomouc, and the town of Uničov near Litovel. The Czech government is preparing special legislation under which it can maintain measures aimed at curbing COVID-19 even after a state of emergency ends on May the 17th. Health Minister Adam Wojciech said work had begun on the bill after a meeting of lawyers from his ministry, the Ministry of Interior, and the government. While the state of emergency will conclude in a week and a half, some restrictions will stay in place until May the 25th. On that date, restaurants, cafes, hotels, and some other facilities will be allowed to reopen in the final stage of a phased government roadmap. The European Commission estimates Czech economic growth will drop by 6.2% this year due to measures to contain the spread of the novel coronavirus. That's a steeper drop than during the 2009 global financial crisis. In its regular spring macroeconomic estimate, the EU executive writes that apart from a decline in production, the export-oriented Czech economy will also suffer due to reduced demand in other countries. Czech unemployment is expected to rise to about 5% next year, while inflation should fall slightly from 3%, mainly due to declining oil prices and lower demand. Mathematics may no longer be a compulsory subject for Czech leaving exams to earn a high school diploma. MPs approved a government proposal on the matter on Wednesday within the framework of an amendment to the Education Act. If the Senate approves the bill, high school students will continue to be able to choose between taking a leaving exam in mathematics or a foreign language. A replica of the Marian Column removed from Prague's Old Town Square over a century ago should be completed by August the 15th, a month ahead of schedule, said sculptor Petr Vanya, as work could continue in the absence of traditional Eastern markets. The original 17th century Marian Column was torn down by protesters shortly after Czechoslovakia was founded in 1918. They considered it a symbol of Austrian rule. A taxi driver taking Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček home on Wednesday night died after a crash. The Czech diplomat was unhurt. Paramedics called to the scene spent 30 minutes trying to resuscitate the 62-year-old driver, who had crashed into a parked car at low speed. Police are investigating the incident. And finally, the weather. Thursday should be cool and cloudy in the morning, with the sun emerging in the afternoon. Daytime highs should range from 15 to 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, a Czech study shows an extremely low level of collective immunity to the COVID-19 virus. Save the Beer Initiative rescues hectolitres of craft beer from destruction. And later, as part of our latest episode of Czech Books You Must Read, we look at Franz Kafka's The Trial. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A government-commissioned collective immunity study aimed at establishing the level of COVID-19 infection within the population shows that the prevalence of the virus is in the order of units per mile. The result rules out the option of relying on herd immunity in the event of a second wave of the pandemic. Daniela Lazarova looked into the story.
Tests on close to 27,000 people based on detecting antibodies to COVID-19 in the blood revealed only 107 positive cases. The rate of infection in different geographic locations ranged from 0 to under 5% in the worst affected regions, which were quarantined just a few weeks ago. In Prague, Brno and Litoměřice, it was less than 0.6%. The result is a far cry from early predictions that around 27% of the population may have been exposed to the virus without showing any symptoms and rules out the option of relying on herd immunity in the event of a second wave of the pandemic. Health Minister Adam Wojtek said the country must prepare for such a scenario, but for now the best option was to hold the set course.
It makes sense to continue easing restrictions while protecting the most vulnerable groups of the population. Given this result, we no longer need to fear an explosion of the epidemic nationwide. What is important now is to focus on local outbreaks, which still present a problem.
The health minister thanked those on the front lines for the dedication and courage they have shown in the face of the crisis, the public for the discipline which had enabled the authorities to bring the epidemic under control, and the army, which is now providing significant assistance in implementing the smart quarantine project that is aimed at keeping the situation under control. The head of the Institute for Health Information and Statistics, Ladislav Dušek, said that while a greater degree of herd immunity would have been useful, the outcome was not entirely unexpected and was the result of the early preventive measures taken.
The result of the collective immunity study in this country is very similar to that in Austria. We pulled the brakes fast and prevented the spread of the virus in the population. This also provides an answer to the question whether the virus was not present in this country much earlier, like at the end of last year. We can't say that it wasn't, but if it was, it was clearly in isolated cases and there was no mass spread.
While there has been no word on how the country will prepare for a possible second wave of the pandemic, which experts predict may come in the autumn, it was announced earlier this week that the State Institute of Public Health and the Institute of Clinical and Experimental Medicine are working on a vaccine for COVID-19. Although the project has come under fire from some on the grounds that the country lacks the money and resources for such an ambitious undertaking, the health minister has defended it, arguing that even if other countries achieve the goal sooner, in the event of a second or third wave of the pandemic, demand for the vaccine worldwide would be overwhelming and it would not be easy to obtain.
Daniela Lazarová reporting there. Now, microbreweries are among the businesses hardest hit by the coronavirus lockdown in the Czech Republic. Due to the closure of restaurants, demand for their beer dropped significantly from one day to the next. To save hectolitres of craft beer from destruction, the owner of the Kikín brewery in central Bohemia launched an initiative called Zachraň pivo, or Save the Beer. It was promptly joined by over 300 microbreweries from the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Ruth Frankova has more.
Michal Pomahač is the owner of the family-run Kikín brewery near Prague and one of the co-founders of the initiative Save the Beer. He got the idea soon after a state of emergency was declared in the Czech Republic when he realized just how serious the situation was for his microbrewery, which was suddenly left with 14,000 litres of beer for which he had no outlet. The initiative was launched on the 25th of March with a public appeal published on its Facebook page. Thousands of beers are waiting to be rescued. Brewed, fresh, unpasteurized beer is perishable. Pouring thousands of liters down the drain will ruin some of us. Do you want to help Czech microbreweries? The response of the public was overwhelming. Within just a few weeks, the Kikín brewery had no more beer to sell, says Michal Pomahač.
We succeeded in selling out all of our beer reserves, and we managed to do it real fast. We didn't brew any beer for about 2 weeks following the announcement of the state of emergency, so for a while we actually had nothing to offer to our customers. So instead, we decided to help out other microbreweries which had bigger stocks, and for a few weeks we have only been selling other people's beer.
The Save the Beer initiative currently offers craft beer from 328 breweries from all around the Czech Republic and also from Slovakia.
All you need to do is visit our website zachraňpivo.cz and look for craft beer in your vicinity through our interactive map. You can also search for over 300 breweries, choose a beer you like, and then come and pick it up on your own. Some breweries have their own e-shops or they run their own delivery service.
Despite the initial success, Michal Pomahač says Czech microbreweries are facing a bleak future. According to the estimates of the Czech Moravian Brewers Association, beer production in the country's 500 microbreweries has fallen by an average of 80-85%, and a quarter of them are unlikely to survive the crisis. Michal Pomahač again.
Although our initiative has helped to save lots of beer and many breweries have temporarily survived, my guess is that the real struggle will only come after the easing of restrictions when the topic of saving microbreweries will have lost its appeal. I hope our initiative will continue to help microbreweries also during the economic crisis, which I think is inevitable, and which will also be fueled by people's fear to assemble. And I was dubbing there the owner of the family-run Kytín Brewery near Prague, Michal Pomahač, who was speaking there to Ruth Frankova. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. Written between 1914 and 1915 during one of Franz Kafka's creative outbursts, the trial revolves around the struggle of the main protagonist, Joseph K., who finds himself suddenly arrested upon waking up one morning. As with much of Kafka's work, the novel has been subject to much interpretation. In this episode of Czech Books You Must Read, we talk to Oxford University's Taylor Professor of the German Language and Literature, Richie Robertson, and Professor Ricarda Schmidt from the University of Exeter about those interpretations, as well as the authors that inspired Kafka to write what is considered to be one of the best novels of the 20th century.
The Czech Books You Must Read.
One of the many myths about Kafka was that he lived in social isolation, says Professor Richie Robertson from Oxford University. In fact, Kafka was active both within the German and Czech communities in Prague where he lived. Kafka's father had Czech employees and Kafka spoke Czech particularly well, although he was not completely flawless. Culturally, Kafka was very much a member of German culture and was familiar with the German classics, says Professor Robertson. However, he was also interested in the Czech cultural sphere, he says.
He's also well-read in Czech literature. He went to the Czech National Theatre, which was unusual for a German speaker. He certainly knew some of the Czech classics, like Božena Němcová, and when he read Russian literature, he did so for preference in Czech, because the language was closer to the original. As for his father, he had a difficult relationship with his very domineering father, but I think his psychological difficulties have been ascribed even more to a withdrawal of love from his mother. It's worth remembering, too, that he had, besides the three sisters who outlived him, he had two brothers who died in early infancy, younger than him, and so his early years were obviously affected by his parents' grief. So a rather neglected and solitary upbringing, which in a way is a good preparation for writing.
The trial was written by Kafka between 1914 and 15. He had already written a number of short stories by then, including The Verdict and The Metamorphosis, and he had also begun writing a novel. How would you describe this period of his life, and do we know why he decided to write the trial at this time?
Kafka's creativity came in bursts. There's one burst in 1912, another in 1914, another about 1916, another in 1922, and in most cases they were triggered by some emotional disturbance. He wrote them his breakthrough story, Das Urteil, The Judgment or the Verdict, a month after meeting Felix Bauer for the first time, to whom he was later engaged. The engagement was broken off very painfully in summer 1914, and he began writing The Trial as a kind of self-therapy. His description of the breakup in his diaries is full of legal metaphors. He describes being summoned to a court in a hotel room where he was confronted by Felice and her best friend and accused of all sorts of bad behaviour. Another question, of course, is why he broke off the trial. His inspiration tended to be intense but short-lived. He simply ran out of steam. Besides the text everyone's familiar with, there are a number of them unfinished chapters, usually printed as appendices, but I can't quite tell what counts as a finished chapter and what doesn't. And Kafka might have taken the story in several other directions. He simply lost track of it and lost confidence in it.
The trial begins with this famous opening. Someone must have been spreading lies about Joseph K., for without having done anything wrong, he was arrested one morning. Upon waking up, the main character Joseph K. finds himself confronted with two men who tell him he is under arrest. I asked Professor Robertson to give us a basic delineation of the synopsis of the book.
The story, you could say, has two movements. After his arrest, K. goes through a phase of denial. He claims to be innocent, but he never asks what the charge is. Or at least he does feebly once, but he's very easily sidetracked. So he protests innocence for a long time. Then in the second phase, he avoids the court but goes on the offensive, tries to influence his case by hiring a lawyer, who turns out to be quite as bad as the court. And the second phase ends with the court approaching him again. He has an unexpected meeting with a clergyman who turns out to be the prison chaplain. And finally, two court officials arrive as his executioners, take him to a quarry outside Prague, and horribly execute him.
What can we say about the main protagonist of the book, Joseph K. himself?
I think quite a lot different. This is not really a novel with characters. Many of the figures who appear have no names, but you can certainly say about Joseph K. that he's a bureaucrat. He has a high position in a bank. He's very much an inhabitant of institutions. Routine and order are all important to him. His arrest upsets him, partly because it breaks his daily order. He expects the maid to bring him breakfast in bed. Instead, a guard in an unidentifiable uniform comes into his bedroom. This is most disruptive. In fact, when Kafka read the account of the arrest to his friends, Kafka and they kept on laughing, because you have this pompous bureaucrat being confronted with something he doesn't understand and reacting in obviously inappropriate ways. So it is, in part, a picture of a man used to routine, confronted with another reality, something that doesn't fit into his tidy world.
According to Professor Ricarda Schmidt from the University of Exeter, the trial alludes to works of German writers E.T.A. Hoffmann and Heinrich von Kleist, who wrote a century before Kafka. For example, she says that footprints of Kleist's 1810 novella Michael Kohlhaas can also be seen in the trial.
Kleist's protagonist Kohlhaas is acting not just simply in his own interests after having been treated unjustly, but he argues he does it for the good of everybody, because there's been such a lot of nepotism in the state that a lot of people are suffering. Kay, in his public address, he's also arguing he is acting in the public interest. But while both Hoffman and Kleist write stories which really deal with the relationship between the state and the individual, Kleist is alluding to Hobbes and Rousseau and Fichte. We have in Kafka all this is being internalized, and the legal system in Kafka is both ubiquitous and anonymous. So Kay is never told what he's accused of, and we don't know who issues the orders for his arrest and for his execution. And the legal and commercial spheres are intertwined. So the bank employees, Franz and Willem, arrest him, and bank employees are there with the official interviewing him. So it's everything that his predecessors did is sort of taking inside the individual.
Kafka actually referred to Kleist as one of his, I quote, blood brothers, a title he would also ascribe to the Russian author Fyodor Mikhailovich Dostoevsky. Looking for connections in how the law is portrayed in Kafka's novel is, of course, not the only interpretation out there. I asked Professor Richie Robertson how the trial has been interpreted since it was first published posthumously by Kafka's friend Max Braut in 1925.
Braut was very keen on a Jewish and theological interpretation, which the court stands for a mysterious God, and he compares it to the Book of Job, where Job wrangles with the inscrutable God. That interpretation, though, didn't prove very popular or convincing to many people, and readers in the West are much more inclined to interpret it as a story of an absent God, of Joseph K.'s struggles with precisely the absence of any divine or metaphysical authority. And it was very rewarding for existentialists as a story of a man thrown back on his own resources. I myself be very sympathetic to that interpretation, but there are plenty of others, none of which you can dismiss completely. When Kafka was first read in Eastern Europe and Russia, people thought that this unknown author must be brought up in the Soviet Union, because he seemed to describe the workings of a police state so accurately. And although that's not quite true, I think that the novel does contain a very, very perceptive analysis of power, authority, the abuse of authority, and how the victim colludes with authority, even in a kind of Stockholm syndrome. It is worth remembering that Kafka had read Dostoevsky, and in a way, the trial is his Dostoevsky novel, is his version of Crime and Punishment, and that there are strong resemblances. Then, structuralism came along and produced some very rewarding, interesting analyses of narrative patterns in Kafka. That was good. Then deconstruction came along, but had nothing to say, because Kafka, who specializes in ambiguity and undecidability, had got there already. More recently, some of the most interesting books about Kafka have been in what you might call cultural studies. A very influential and fascinating book came out in 1992 entitled Kafka's Clothes, which looks at the importance of clothes in Kafka's life and works, and comes to a great many interesting conclusions. People have written about Kafka's travels, his reading of travel books, about the photographs and pictures that often appear in Kafka's works, and drawn interesting conclusions. And people have been interested too in communication, in the telephone, in letters, the typewriter and so on, in Kafka. But the downside of this interest, although it has produced a lot of valuable work, is that it shows people shy away from the big metaphysical questions the novels certainly raise. And I think that's a pity. I'd be inclined myself In fact, I have tried to go back and historicize Kafka by seeing him as a writer very sensitive to a period in which not only religious, but also metaphysical truths have become incredible, and yet it feels very hard to do without them. Very hard to accept, for example, that the question about the meaning and purpose of life has no answer. And it's worth remembering that Kafka certainly knew something of Nietzsche.
There are so many articles, papers, and even books that interpret Kafka's work. What do you think makes him so fascinating for analysis? Is it this ambiguity?
Let's be positive and say openness to interpretation. Yes, he is ambiguous, and in some ways you might consider that a fault. On the other hand, it makes for endless fascination. You don't simply read these stories passively. You work at them. You practically help to write them yourself. And the liberty that they allow to the reader to become co-author is a major source of their fascination.
So in a way they can put a bit of themselves into his work.
The result is that all interpretations of Kafka, including mine, contain an element of self-projection. And some people have said they're really Rorschach ink blots, which you just see what you want to see. But I think the reality is much more complicated than that.
Is there any way you could perhaps predict how you think Kafka is going to be analysed in the future? How will the changing world reflect in our interpretations of Kafka's work?
Just one idea. A frequent theme in Kafka, although not in the trial, is the relationship between human beings and animals. He has several stories about animals who behave like human beings or claim to have become human beings. A report to an academy in which an ape reports how he made himself into a human being, a story absolutely full of irony and black humour, is the best known example. Now, partly Kafka responding to Darwin, partly to Nietzsche, who's always asking what kind of animal humanity is. But nowadays, when we know much more about animals, we find that they're more like us than we thought. Some animals can solve problems. Some animals are much more intelligent than we thought and can reason. I think that's an avenue where Kafka shed quite a lot of light.
And that was Oxford University's Taylor Professor of the German Language and Literature, Richie Robertson, finishing that interview exploring the complexities of Franz Kafka's famous novel, The Trial. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.